If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
And now I'll tell you, on our side of the pond, bankruptcy means that's your career as an entrepreneur is over. That is the pinnacle of failure. You are out. You're never starting a new company again. It's not like in the US where it's like, you know, fail three times before you become a millionaire, right? It's a part of the learning curve. We're not allowed to do that here. You know, if you fail, it's done. You didn't have the skills.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Super excited to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can you give our listeners just a quick bio on who you are?
Well, so my background is my dad's from the US, but I'm born and raised and I live in Sweden and I invest in property in the United Kingdom. So let's just say I got an international background.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on: where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Well, so the way I started was, I think it's the same way a lot of people were. I was in a regular job, you know, working as a consultant. And I was brought into this little company, two young guys that started their business. And they were, you know, they're doing well. They hired me to help them scale their business. But as I got to know them, it turned out that they had left to start this company. They'd left. They were working at one of the major banks in Sweden, and they were on the management tracks. You know, one day they would be CEO of this bank.
Sure.
And for me, realizing that they'd left my dream career to go and start this crappy little company, right? I was shocked. And I confronted them one day at lunch. I'm like, guys, what were you thinking? And they just, you know, they laughed. They'd heard the question before. And they just said, well, Daniel, have you read the book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Right.
And I said, no, I haven't. They said, well, read that book. And if you still have that question, then come talk to us. I said, well, all right, fair enough. So I read the book. And like I said, I think a lot of people started that way. And, you know, I understood why they wanted to, you know, instead of climb the ladder, own the ladder. Mm-hmm. But for me, I got just completely, you know, I just fell in love with the idea of property investing and building a portfolio. Now, the issue I had was Sweden is very heavily regulated. So it's very, very hard to get into the Swedish market. It's very hard to get lending. And what that did was it put us, you know, it put us back at square one, right? We're really excited to get started. And then it's not going to work. And that's when we took the step to start analyzing other markets. We looked at a bunch of European markets and we said, all right, Spain seems really good and the UK seems really good. So which one do we do? And the reason why we liked Spain was, well, you know, who wouldn't want to go to Spain, right? But it's got a great tourism market. The problem is the domestic economy isn't as strong as the UK. So therefore, we said, no, the UK's got the tourism. It's got a strong economy. Obviously, things have happened with COVID and Brexit. But even with that, it's a strong, stable economy. And we said, all right, we're going into the market. And it's in many ways, as an investor market, it's very similar to the US. It's a little less creative than you guys can be in the US. There are some strategies that don't exist, but a lot of them do. And at the same time, it's a little more, let's just say a little more calm. I usually say the US, you can explode and, you know, you can become a millionaire really quickly, but then you get sued and you lose it just as quickly. In the UK, it's a little more of a slow, steady growth and, you know, just a stable portfolio. And so it worked well. The idea worked really well. But I should say when we started out, we did everything right, right? You know, we hired a mentor, we got the help, we got introduced to people that were supposed to help us, and we got ripped off for 400,000 pounds. Yeah. And that was not my money. I'd raised investor capital. You know, I was the ideal student, right? I said, I'm going all in. I raised capital and we got ripped off and we lost it all. And I'll never forget the phone call when my accountant called me and said, Daniel, it's time to bankrupt your company. And now I'll tell you, on our side of the pond, bankruptcy means that's your career as an entrepreneur is over. That is the the pinnacle of failure. You are out. You're never starting a new company again. It's not like in the US where it's like, you know, fail three times before you become a millionaire, right? It's a part of the learning curve. We're not allowed to do that here. You know, if you fail, you failed. It's done. You didn't have the skills. And so when he said that, my heart dropped and I was like, oh my God, all right, what does this mean? What happens? And he said, well, actually what we would do is we'd write off all that debt and you can start over. I'm like, whoa, what do you mean start over? You know, with all this debt on my shoulders, you know, no sleep, people calling me asking for their money. And he says, no, we just hit a reset button. Let's go from, let's take what you've learned and go again. And I'm like, that sounds pretty good. Wow. But then I asked a fateful question and I asked, well, if I do this, if we bankrupt the company, I don't pay that debt, but who does? And he said, well, your investors aren't getting much of their money back. And I said, so it's not me starting over. It's me throwing everyone else under the bus. He says, yeah, I guess you could call it that. I said, well, we're not doing that. I have no idea how we're turning this business around, but somehow we're going to turn this business around. And that's where we were really blessed. We met some amazing people. We actually had Kim Kiyosaki, you know, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, come over in Sweden and host an event with us. And we got her to know her really well. She jumped on multiple calls with me and Gisella, gave us lots of great advice, how to restructure the debt, how to kind of rejig our business, start going again. We worked a lot with the Tony Robbins organization, with the Zuckerberg Institute, and lots of great people. And over the next few years, we did over 100 property deals. And the successful deals kind of compensated for these original deals, and we could kind of turn things around. So it was a slow, long, rough slog, but we kind of finally found our way out of the wilderness.
Wow, man, that's an amazing story. One, good for you. I'm assuming eventually you were able to make your original investors whole.
Yeah, so I mean, obviously they didn't get the profits they're hoping for, and you know, we had to restructure and rejig a lot of the debt. But overall, yeah, I think everyone at least in the end appreciated what we were trying to do and what we did for them, even though obviously, you know, some people aren't happy when you do it. We failed as an investor and, you know, we got to own up to that. We promised them a certain result and we couldn't deliver, but it was a learning curve. And the one positive I should say that came out of that is, you know, it kind of became a public spectacle, right? You know, people saw and followed along on this journey. So when we did turn it around, people started reaching out and kind of going like, hey, Daniel, can't you guys help me? I would love to learn what you've done. And originally I said, no, I'm like, I've been through this. I'm done. You know, I want to just take it easy now. I've deserved my rest.
Sure.
But at the same time, I knew what they were walking into. And when someone's asking for help, it's almost impossible to say no. So we said, yes, we'll help you out. And it turned out to be so much fun. You know, helping someone who's going through and building a portfolio and becoming financially free was so fun. And that's what became what is today Momentum Property Education, where we teach property investing and help investors. And actually, we started it at the beginning of 2019. And then, you know, the pandemic came. But actually, in 2020, our clients acquired over 5 million pounds of property. So we're very proud of them. They've done really, really well. And we're hoping to see a further growth this year. The target is to get between 15 and 20 million pounds. Obviously, we don't own a part of it. It's our students. They're doing their own deals. But it's kind of our pride, right? You know, it becomes like your kids. You love seeing them succeed. And they're building huge, nice portfolios now.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Lots of stuff to dig into here. So many questions to ask. When you select your target markets, right? You said, hey, we're looking at Spain, we were looking in the UK, and then, you know, where you ended up investing primarily in the UK, right?
Yeah, we did some deals in Spain back when, kind of just after the crash of 2008, 2009, because the lending was amazing. You know, you're getting 110% lending at below 1%. And that's because there's purchase tax of 10% in Spain. So essentially, they were covering the deal plus the purchase tax. You just had to pay like legals and stuff.
Right.
And then you were getting at below 1% interest. So that was good times. Now, that was because they had so many repossessions. They've now gotten rid of most of those repossessions, which means now instead you're asking for a new mortgage, which means they're not so keen anymore because they remember what happened last time. So right. Now they're kind of going like, no, we don't want to lend. So now the lending is pretty poor there. So that made us pull back out and focus on the UK, which again has been much more stable.
Right, right. What asset class did you focus on?
Well, we've always been residential as our main focus. In Spain, though, we did aim at the tourism market, but we did it by buying, you know, villas and flats and stuff and renting them out through like Airbnb. So we didn't go into the hotel industry. We did it, you know, kind of residential property one by one and then running them as commercial units. In the UK, it's mainly the base of the portfolio is residential. We've now done some different developments. We're building some blocks of flats that we're going to be actually one in Manchester that is right in one of the largest suburbs of Manchester. We're right in the center of that town. We're converting an old factory into an apartment complex that will be then running as a kind of like a hotel through Airbnb. So that's going to be really, really cool. And then we have some commercial. We were the founding investors in a golf resort in South Wales, but mainly we're a residential property investor.
Right. No, that's fascinating. I mean, those are a lot of varied asset classes. So talk to us how you manage that. One, how do you manage it from Sweden?
Yeah,
so I can hardly manage something in my own backyard. So how are you doing it from Sweden and keeping track of your contractors and doing monetary conversions and raising money and staying compliant? I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces there.
Yeah, you're really knocking the nail on the head there. That is the complexity. It's not really, for me, it doesn't really matter what asset class I'm investing in or, you know, even what area of the UK I'm investing in, because whatever happens, I'm still in Sweden. I'm still on the other side of you know, I'm a flight away. So for me, what we did wrong originally was we had just the wrong people. We had the wrong joint venture partners. We got the wrong builders. We didn't manage them correctly. And people kept, you know, it was like death by a thousand cuts, right? Everyone was skinning off of the top. And finally, you know, they'd fleece the sheep. And that was us. Now what we do is, first off, we're very, very particular with who we work with. We only have 6 partners in the entire United Kingdom that we trust and work with that have, you know, a decade's worth of experience, that have built up a proper company, that are fully compliant, that, you know, they're doing this properly. So we only work with like highly accredited people. And then from there, what we'll do is in the UK, we call them sourcing agents. They're your equivalent to a wholesaler in the US. So what they'll do is they'll bring us the deal, but we need them to be able to provide the full turnkey solution, right? They got to be able to provide the project management, the building teams, the lettings, you know, the management, all that. And then what we do is we make sure that we involve all these people. So for example, you know, when the sourcing agent brings the deal, they'll help us, you know, if it's a refurb deal, we'll then have a project manager come in to manage the builder. We'll also make sure the sourcing agent himself or herself is there overseeing it. And then we always involve the management agent, both because we want their input, because they're the ones that are going to get the property in the end, but also because they care that the quality of the work is good. Because whatever problems that come up after the refurb is going to fall into their lap. So they're very, very useful to helping out. So we have, you know, 3 people overseeing the builder. We're getting regular reports from the builder and we're making sure everyone is accredited and trustworthy. So that allows us to project manage the actual project. And then once the deal is done, we always are working with a management agent who focuses on the strategy that fit that property best. So it could be just simple buy to let, you know, rent it out. In the UK, we do a lot of something called an HMO. That means a house of multiple occupancy. So essentially, it's like a dorm where you'll buy, for example, I just bought a house, like a really big villa that we're renting out by the room, 11 rooms. They got a kitchen, you know, shared kitchen and living room. They got shared bathroom, but then they also got bathrooms in all the rooms and their own little room. And what that does, of course, is it pushes, I mean, they pay maybe 60% of what they would for a flat, for an apartment. But because it's so much smaller, we get so many more rooms in there. So our yield goes through the roof. And so then we'll have a specialized HMO lettings agent, right? A management agent who will run that. If we do service apartments, we're working with an expert on that. And so for me over here, it doesn't really matter because all I'm doing is I'm getting my monthly report from whoever it is who's running that property. And I just got to make sure I'm getting my monthly reports from everyone, which is, you know, simple spreadsheet follow-up.
Yeah. And even so, it sounds like the in this HMO deal, like there is an independent third party manager. That's not somebody that's on staff for you particularly.
No, we outsource all of that. And that comes to the fact that, again, I'm working with good people, and we have multiple good people we work with. So my portfolio has become kind of spread out, both in that, you know, we tried out people that maybe didn't turn out to be so good. And now we have a property in an area where we're not acquiring more because we don't have a good partner there. But also in areas where we got a good partner, we're building a steadily over time, building a portfolio. And the management agents charge for a buy to let, they'll charge 10% of the rent. For an HMO, they'll charge 15%. And a service department, they'll charge 20%. And that includes them then doing all the marketing, doing all the, you know, tenant checks. You know, they have to actually make sure that the tenants pay, you know, they got to do that work. They do all the evictions. You know, if something breaks in the middle of the night, they don't call me, they call the management agent. I mean, my tenants don't even know I'm the owner most of the time because they just sign a contract with my management agent. So they take care of all that contact, and it's worth paying a little bit off the top because it just allows me to put all that aside. And I can focus on what I do best, and that's really raising money. I mean, that's been our kind of specialty, and we've identified 25 different sources of capital that you can use to fund that's your deposit 25 ways. Then, of course, you have all the other ways of creatively structuring a deal and different types of mortgages. But if you want to put a deposit down, we've identified 25 different ways to fund that, which obviously makes life a little easier for us as investors.
Right, right. Yeah, the need for funds never seems to go away. I'm curious, let's say you're 400,000 pounds in the hole, right? This is right when you're getting kind of kicked in the teeth. And you're 400,000 pounds in the hole. How did you go out and raise more money? Because it probably took more money, I'm assuming. Correct me if I'm wrong here. But to then hire excellent coaches like Kim Kiyosaki.
No, you're 100% right.
And then to get on, you know, to get the industry leaders on the phone and talking to you, they don't generally do that for free. So what was that transition like from?
No, well, I was very blessed there. Yeah, no, we were really blessed. I mean, because we were running events in Sweden. So we were an event organizer. So we could bring these people in and to come speak at our events, and we actually became friends with them. Uh-huh. And in Kim and Robert's case, we became business partners. We're translating their cash flow game, Cash Flow 101, to Swedish, and been able to, you know, and we're distributing that game. So that's kind of opened up, and Kim has been great in helping us out. And she came on our podcast, the Momentum Investing Podcast, as a guest.
Oh, that's cool.
So she's really given a lot. She's just such a wonderful person. So that really helped. But yeah, the hard part was going out and raising capital. And really what we did was we leveraged the brand of these people we knew. We kind of said, look, this is what we've done, and it hasn't really gone well, but we've gotten these new contacts. This is how we're doing it. This is how we're safeguarding our downside. And of course, we got these amazing people who are helping us. You know, will you give us a chance? And surprisingly, I think honesty surprisingly works. All right. I think we all want to always kind of the Facebook syndrome, right? You always want to make your life look perfect.
Right.
And we've built our entire business on going out there and say, well, look, I'm kind of a screw up. I lost 400,000 pounds. These are deals I've lost money on. I made these mistakes. Same thing in Momentum Property Education. Most of our courses, if you take any of our courses, you'll hear me talking about my mistakes more than my successful deals. Because we're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to make an air of like, oh, we're brilliant, we're always perfect. What we're trying to say is like, look, these are mistakes I made and learned from. Now, if you are, you know, as they say, a smart person learns from their own mistakes, a wise person learns from someone else's. And that's what I see in our students. They are wise people. They're learning from our mistakes, and now they just don't do them. They find their own mistakes, don't get me wrong, but they're not making our mistakes.
Right. No, that's absolutely brilliant. I like what you said there about leveraging the brand of others. What was the timeline between when maybe you got that call and when you had finally turned a corner where you said, okay, you know, we've righted the ship And, you know, we've actually got something still to work with, and we're moving forward in a meaningful way.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I can't give you a moment when I really sat down and said that. It was such a gradual process, right? It was, you know, day in, day out, trying to find a new way, you know, talk to a new investor, find a new deal, restructure, you know, have that tough conversation with an investor and explain, sorry, that it didn't go the way we thought. And, you know, it was that slog that went for a long time. And at the same time, you're out there, you're talking about the successful deals you're doing, and you know that the investors who were a part of the failed deals are listening and going like, well, screw you, you got a good deal, right? It took a long time. I mean, it was years, probably 4 or 5 years before we kind of sat down and kind of really said, wow, this actually feels pretty good. Look at this. We have a portfolio. And obviously, I think we were out of the woods before then. But when you're in it, when you're there, you're so, it wasn't until then that we sat down and we did our balance sheet and we actually said, wow, this is actually, it's a plus sign here. And there's enough zeros for me to be proud of myself.
Right.
And and feel that, you know, this actually looks pretty good.
Right, right. No, that's awesome. That is absolutely awesome. What's it like raising, or let me ask you this, do you raise money only in Sweden or do you raise money in multiple countries?
Yeah, now it's become international. As our brand has grown, it's become international. Now, though, I luckily don't really need to raise finance anymore. I have a partnership with the funding line where they've essentially said, as long as the deal fulfills certain criteria, they'll fund 100% of my property deals. Now, these criteria are really, really tough. So I'm not getting a lot of deals coming through. Our ambition is to get 20 deals this year. Probably we'll hit 10, 15 using this funding line. But but they'll fund my deals. It allows us to grow and allows me to just reinvest the money we're making in our portfolio. So I'm not really running around too much now raising finance, but when we were actively, I have investors from probably 4 or 5 different countries. But again, you know, the US is like Europe, right? You know, each state is like its own country. So think of it as I have investors from 4 or 5 different states.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Is it tough keeping up with compliance across multiple countries, or is it fairly easy?
No, we're in the EU, so it kind of all falls under the same kind of rules. And we're still small enough, or have been small enough, I should say, that we kind of fly under those, the regulatory bodies kind of requirements. And now then we were able to shift over and use this funding line, which is a regulated platform. So that kind of takes us out of that. But it is definitely something you always have to be mindful of and keep in mind. But as long as you're doing small scale deals in the UK, it's very easy to stay compliant.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. Daniel, you're doing amazing things, and I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Let's jump here into the final four, if we can.
All right, let's go for it.
Yeah. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
All right. So I would say we've identified we call it our success formula. It's KAP, and that stands for knowledge, action, and people. So if you're going to succeed in anything, you know, make sure you learn about it first. I mean, Warren Buffett said he never invests in anything that he doesn't understand. So that's the first step. Make sure you understand what you're doing. Get the knowledge first. Without action, there's no results. And then as I've been kind of touting this whole interview, is it's all about the people. People is the key to success. That's the key to all your money. And it's the key to all the success in your deal. So if you work on those three parts, networking, getting the right people, gaining your knowledge, finding yourself a mentor, listening to shows like this. I mean, you're already doing it. So you're doing a great job if you're listening to this episode. And then just make sure you then put it into action. Then you'll be fine.
Right. No, that's great. That is great. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
For us, I'm one of the things we run our Momentum Investing podcast, which allows me to meet amazing people. Well, like yourself, Sam. So, and I'm always learning from them. You know, I've met some people who are, I mean, they are both in property, but also in other industries. And by talking to them, hearing what they're doing, their latest, you know, talking to a lot of people in the venture capital space or who specialize in raising funds from venture capital. And I've learned so much about how they evaluate deals, how they look at opportunities, how they raise finance, how they present it. So I think right now I'm working a lot on just sitting down with amazing people, just downloading their knowledge and trying to find the nuggets that I can implement into our businesses. So that's been really, really huge for me.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
Oh, I love that question. That is beautiful. So we have two different things. We have both, we actually do see Momentum Property Education as a giving back, because it is, you know, there are other companies in this industry, and sadly, most of them in the UK are not very good. We see, I have a lot of our competitors' students actually call me asking for help, because about 50% of those deals are going sideways and the companies aren't helping them. So they kind of come to me, even though they're not our students, because they know our brand, and they kind of say, hey, can you help me out? So tomorrow I'm jumping on a call with a gentleman who's been ripped off very similar to what I went through. And we're going to go through and we're going to analyze his deal. See, can we figure out a new builder? Can I introduce a new builder into it? Is it even worth it? Or should he sell now and cut his losses and try to start over? And, you know, he's not paying me a dime, but I'm there for him. I'm helping him. And that's what we try to do. Every single person who buys from Momentum is successful. So I kind of, well, I mean, that's, you know, everyone who puts it into play has had success. We haven't had a single deal go south. So for that reason, we kind of see this as a mission. Every person that we fail to kind of close, right? Everyone that buys from someone else instead, we know as a 50-50 chance of falling flat on their face. So that is one really important mission for us. The other thing is we've started our own foundation. And so a charitable foundation. So this winter, Gisela, my wife, who we run all our businesses together, she ran a project here on Gotland where we live, where she delivered food, like a Christmas dinner to, I think it was 70 families here on the island who couldn't afford their own food and you know, Christmas presents for their kids. And it was really cool. Nothing had ever been done like this together. She got the church involved. She got the, you know, the local food stores involved. She got local people involved. And they were able to get, you know, find these 70 people, you know, to have them come and actually apply to get the food. And then she, you know, she got everyone involved in it. And we were able to deliver, you know, 70 dinners and Christmas presents for those kids. So that was really, really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. I'm sure that was a very rewarding experience. Daniel, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so thank you so much for asking. Well, I mean, if you want to keep connecting with us, you know, we have the Momentum Investing Podcast. We interview some really cool people like Kim Kiyosaki, Jordan Harbinger. You can also connect with us on Facebook. We got the International Property Investors Group there. So you can find that by going to Momentum Property Education on Facebook, and the group is linked. Or, you know, we got Momentum Property Education on YouTube, on Instagram, on Twitter, and I'm on Clubhouse now. So you can find me at Daniel Wood or at Property Skills. And I usually do maybe 2, 3, 4 rooms a week. So yeah, happy to connect. Whichever media you use, we're trying to be there to connect and provide value. We have a free introduction course, which is the 3 most common mistakes new investors make and how to avoid them. So that you can just get at momentumgift.com. It's a 2-hour introduction course, completely free of charge, that teaches you really how to get into the property industry. It's applicable whether you're in the US or Europe. It's about the principles, how it works. So that might be a great way to start.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for sharing that. I do appreciate it. Daniel, it's been great, man. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. And thank you everyone for listening.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.